At some point, you realize you're not in control. And when that happens, for someone like me who is always in control, the moment I realize, oh shit, I'm not in control of anything.
Ben, first of all, thank you for sending me this book, The Bucket List Journal. Is this available for people to buy?
It is. Yeah.
Wow.
It's on Amazon.
So this book has provided some of the most important transformations of my life. So not by virtue of the prompts yet, but the section where you could just free flow, journal, write whatever, mm-hmm. has been responsible for some major breakthroughs in my life.
Wow.
And so it will always hold a special place in my heart because of that. So thank you, man.
Thank you. So the journaling at the back.
Yes. The free flow.
Yep.
And it, you know, it was just because it's easy to take with me wherever I went. Mm-hmm. And there was imbued in a sense of like, oh, this is like a homey vibe.
Yeah.
And so I felt comfortable taking it with me, even if I wasn't filling out the bucket list section. Mm-hmm. So thank you for creating it.
You're welcome. Thank you. And would you journal about your dreams or your goals, or would you just free flow whatever stream of consciousness was coming up?
So I actually, one of my friends is a coach.
Yeah.
And she helps people with communication and all this stuff. And we went through sessions and she's like, bring some paper. And I was like, I got you. And so this is, it's just like so near and dear to my heart. Do you have like a special journal or something like that? Like something special of the things you've written?
Yeah, well, that's what I didn't have one. This is why I created the bucket list journal, because I felt like I wanted a safe place that I kind of treasured for my biggest dreams, the things that I were really important to me. And I also know that it's important to keep that for a long time because you want to come back to it and update it. So you kind of, you want to love this book that you're going to be continue to update over time, and you want to love to have it out, and you want to love to have to write in it. So I just knew that I wanted it to be aesthetically pleasing, but also be functional. And so that's why I did like the linen cover and why I chose that type of book, so that people felt like it was a really nice place for their dreams to live. And then the format of it is to actually, you know, get you over those barriers that stop you from doing these things. And so part of it is, what are those barriers? And then part of it is the process to overcome those barriers that sometimes unconsciously just hold us back. So it was, I didn't really know what I was making, but I did end up with something that I think really, really works. So I appreciate it. And no one's ever talked about the back and the free journaling. So that's why I'm really happy that you like it.
Yeah, man. It's a special book, and it's a special, the intentions that you set with it have allowed that to occur, like the growth to happen for me, because I have a million different journals and it was this one that I picked.
Cool.
So there's something there. What I really liked is the start about the intentions, the prompts, because I thought like these are great for journaling, but they're also great for life. And the four that stuck out are always be true to yourself. Mm-hmm. Forget what others think, take action quickly, and give without expectations. If you live a life based on those four, you're living a pretty damn good life.
You have it figured out. Yeah, that's it. I mean, and those four things are also get you over these barriers, right? Like most people don't live true to themselves. 76% of people on their deathbed, their biggest regret is, I wish I would have lived for me. Most people are living for other people, or they're living a life that it's expected of them. This idea of taking action quickly to create your own inspiration through action. So usually we're waiting to feel inspired to take action, and then we wait for a long time because the inspiration really hits. But by taking small, simple steps, you are the architect of your own inspiration. You create it. And then you start to feel inspired through action versus waiting for inspiration to hit. And give without expectations is something that I've learned from the beginning of this bucket list mission that I started with my friends. It was always one thing on our list and helping someone else achieve something on their bucket list item. And I've always found when you give without expecting anything in return, you automatically get more than you would want in return. And somehow something happens that's unexpected down the line that, you know, this goodwill comes back to you. And I'm guilty of it as well. Like sometimes you give because you want something, you know, or maybe you give and then you think, well, down the line, they'll throw me a bone or I'll ask a favor of them. And it's more transactional. But you lose that. When you give selflessly, you end up getting just as much or more immediately versus waiting for the gratification of getting something down the line. And the irony is you usually get more by giving more anyways, but you also get that just, there's something about this resonance of that happens when you give that you just don't get when you do something for yourself. It's just sort of different, hits different, you know? And so that's why I think people, as they get older, they realize and they start to do these simple things like give back or, you know, tell people how they really feel or start living more true to themselves versus caring. They stop caring what other people think. And so I think you can learn so much from people that have lived many years because they just, the closer you get to death, the more perspective you have. And when we started this project, it was always death that was our filter. You know, it was like, we'd ask people, what do you want to do before you die? We would ask ourselves that question so that we could remember we were going to die, so that we would keep the things that were important top of mind. Because that was the only thing that cut through all the bullshit to actually make us focus on what the things were important. And usually we get distracted by the day-to-day, but death has a way of sobering you up. So that was the intention with the journal, was to keep those things top of mind. And then hopefully the process that you go through with those, the rest of the prompts and starting to redefine what a bucket list is. So it's not just adventure and travel. It's not just skydive. It's not just bungee jump, but it's 10 categories of life that you think about. And that's what you think about in the journal. So there's adventure, travel. There's how do you want to give back? There's relationship goals, intellectual goals, creative goals, financial goals, professional goals, right? There's all of this, these other buckets of life that you want to think about when you write your list, because your list is a reflection of who you truly are and a holistic reflection of all the things that are going to bring you joy and happiness and fulfillment that typically get pushed by the day-to-day, get buried by the day-to-day. And the name of this whole project is called The Buried Life, because this poem written 150 years ago spoke the same feeling, this feeling of putting off your dreams and putting off your true self because the day-to-day gets in the way. So it's sort of the human experience. And that's, I think, our biggest challenge in life is to live authentically. And this bucket list, it started out as a fun road trip with three friends, and it turned out to be a journey of self-discovery, understanding who I truly am so that I could live true to that.
When do you feel like you're living most authentically?
When I am around people that inspire me and that make me feel more like myself. So a lot of the times it is this, my friends, my family, and my partner, people that I feel most at ease with and therefore am able to be myself and also push me to be the best version of myself and to dream big. People that believe in me and my dreams and want me to win and celebrate my successes. So people that inspire me also make me feel like I then can do more because I see them doing these great things. That makes me feel like I'm my true self. And when I am doing something that where I feel like I'm in this state of flow, where I'm in this state of ease, you know, where life starts to happen for me, I know that I am being true to myself. When I'm not being true to myself, I start to get depressed because I'm suppressing this true desire or these true, my true self, basically. Whether that's like I'm suppressing my feelings about a relationship, or I'm suppressing my my feelings about the job I'm doing, the work I'm doing every day, you know, and I'm doing it for other reasons, where eventually that catches up to me and I start to just feel like I'm slowly shutting down. So, and I think a lot of people are feeling depressed because they are not living authentically and they're not doing those things that they know deep down they truly want. And that's been my experience. I've gone through a few depressions and each one, there's been a big part of my life that's not in alignment with, in hindsight, what I truly wanted and who I truly was. Now, this is outside of the fact that when you struggle with a mental illness, there's many other factors. I don't want to simplify this as a golden arrow to solve this problem. But I, in my experience, my feelings of depression have come from, in a large part, this feeling of not being true to who I really am.
When I was doing research for this, I found out that you call yourself a mental fitness advocate.
Mm-hmm. What is that?
A mental fitness advocate is somebody, I mean, what I like about mental fitness versus mental health is just that one of the big problems with mental health is the stigma. And a lot of the stigma comes from the language. And when you say things like mental health, when you say things like depression, when you say there's this weighted stigma that comes along with it. And now it's getting better and better, and it is less stigmatized since the pandemic, which is a great thing because more people are realizing that this is the human condition, that we all have ups and downs, and that's okay, and we need to talk about it. But, you know, if you are able to just simply look at your physical health in the same way you look at your mental health, and you think about it, your physical fitness and your mental fitness, your perspective starts to change a little bit, and you think like, oh, this is like, why this is just biohacking. This is just brain hacking. This is just, you know, working out your brain, you know? And I just think that language is very powerful. So I like changing it up. I like using different words that aren't stigmatized and don't have that weight. But really at the end of the day, what I'm an advocate of is just figuring out what those things are in your life that enable you to navigate stress and the ups and downs that come with life, and giving people just permission to talk about it, and stripping away the shame, stripping away any type of negative self-talk that comes along with, you know, feeling like I'm fucked up. And the truth is, we all feel like that sometimes. And that when you feel like that, a lot of times that is an opportunity for you to move through that and come out the other side stronger. And that's what I've experienced. And I've been through some deep downs in my life. You know, like when I first was before the buried life and this bucket list adventure, I dropped out of school because I got really depressed. And I was on the national U19 rugby team. I got dropped from the team. I couldn't leave my parents' house. I was completely debilitated, crippled by this depression. Couldn't go hang out with my friends. My parents had to force me to go for a 15-minute walk every day. And I was just flattened. And this is my first ever mental health crisis that I've been through. So I just thought it was over. You know, like when you go through your first mental health crisis, you're like, I guess I'm broken. And at that point, this was, you know, 15 years ago, more than that, people weren't talking about it. So I didn't know that this was something that people went through. No social media. None of my friends had been through anything. And I just thought, I guess I can't go on, right? And as I look back, and there were a few things that pulled me out of that, we can talk about that, and we can talk about this sort of some of these habits that I've learned that help me, so that hopefully they can help other people. But when I look back, I realize, you know, I just did not know who I was. I didn't know how to serve myself. I also was living a life that I thought was the dream, but it wasn't my dream. Mm.
Whose dream was it?
It was my community's dream. It was everyone in around me that I looked up to, their dream. It was the star athlete, the star academic, you know, someone getting a scholarship, someone playing at high level and, you know, having everybody like them, basically, right? Like I was trying to be liked by everybody. And you sort of realize if you are the type of person that is always in control and you figured out high school, you figured out sports and you figured out college or university, and at some point you realize you're not in control. And when that happens, for someone like me who is always in control, the moment I realize, oh shit, I'm not in control of anything. I started to spiral, right? And I didn't have anything to sort of stop that spiral. And that's why I got so low where I couldn't leave the house. And out of that, this really cool thing happened where my friends pulled me out of the house because they realized that I was really not doing well and kind of forced me to come work with them in a new town. And I was forced to do things that I didn't want to do. I was forced to get a job because I had to pay for rent. I started feeling a little bit of confidence, a little bit of self-worth. I was forced to talk about what I was going through. Suddenly I felt that I could, that other people knew what I was experiencing because they'd gone through something similar. And I started to also meet new types of kids that were inspiring. I met people that were creative. I met people that had traveled. I met kids my own age that started their own businesses. I never met young people like this. And I was like, well, these kids gave me energy. And I realized some people gave me energy. Some people drew energy from me. And I thought, okay, I'm going to try and only surround myself with people that inspire me after that trip. Only people that give me energy. Because I need it by necessity to be able to bounce back from the depression that I was starting to now feel a little bit more like myself. But I knew that it was essential for me to only surround myself with these types of people. And so that was my commitment. And so I came back and I called the one person that I knew of that was inspiring. And he was a filmmaker from my neighborhood. And his name was Johnny. And Johnny made movies in the summers for his friends. And I was like, I want to make a movie. And that's what started this movie making mission to, you know, which would ultimately come to be a movie or a documentary about a bucket list and helping other people achieve their bucket list items. And once I started doing that and started to feel this new energy of being creative, you know, and also going after these sometimes totally stupid, totally crazy, but totally fun dreams, from grow a mustache to streak a field to, you know, sing the national anthem to a packed stadium, I started to feel more alive. And that started my journey of self-discovery, of understanding these things that actually I wanted to do, because before then I was only living for other people. And that was only supposed to be a 2-week road trip where we went out, made a short film, showed our friends, went back to school. But unexpectedly, this is in Canada, out in the West Coast in British Columbia, people started to hear about it and they wanted to help. So random strangers would say, hey, I saw your bucket list online. I can help you ride a bull, get up in a hot air balloon, make a toast at a stranger's wedding, and then send us their dreams asking for our help. And we just got this overwhelming response. So we thought, oh, fuck, okay, well, I guess we're going to do this again next summer. So we just kept doing it year after year after year. And that 2-week road trip just didn't really stop.
So a lot of people in their life might be thinking about, how do I find those inspiring people? What should they do and how should they go about finding them and surrounding themselves with people that they want to be like?
I think one is to be aware of how you're feeling around certain people so that you can listen to that, because there are going to be some people where you realize, wow, I feel very at ease with this person. I feel excited. There's an energy. I just can be myself, right? And then there's people where you feel you can't quite put your finger on it, but it's just not as easy to be around them. There's sort of a, the conversations are a little more forced. It's like you're trying too hard. And then there's people that you straight up know, you're like, well, I can't be around this person. Like, it's just, they're sucking the energy, right? It's just sort of like, are they giving you energy? Or are they pulling energy from you? So that's the first step, is to sort of just be aware that this actually happens and that you can protect yourself. Like, if you go into a situation with someone that you know is going to drain your energy, you can kind of put up your barrier and you can sort of protect yourself. Because sometimes, let's say maybe it's with family, you know, where you're not just going to not be with them, but you just sort of need to know that, okay, I need to be aware of this so I can protect my energy. And when you find someone that you really feel like energizes you, it's really simple. Just hang out with them more and hang out with their friends, because typically people hang out with like-minded people. And so you want to invest in those people to start to meet their friends in their circle. And so let's just say maybe you don't have anyone in your life that gives you energy. How do you find that one person? And that could be around similar interests. So you kind of have to put yourself out there. You know, you sort of have to, if let's say you're interested in filmmaking, you kind of got to look for groups of filmmakers that you might be able to just start to meet people, put yourself on a limb, be vulnerable, and actually push yourself to meet different types of people. And then once you do find someone, you kind of lean into that relationship and lean into perhaps like meeting their friends. And I still subscribe to this today. You know, I am always trying to lean into the friendships that energize me. And just because it's just so much fun. It's just the best way to live. And I don't really have, I'm very loyal to the people that I love, but I don't confuse that with needing to hang out with friends that I've been friends with for a long time. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with, or I think it's actually natural as two people evolve to evolve in different ways. And so the people that I was friends with in high school and college, and even, you know, 5 years ago, I was a very different person. And they were very different people. And just like in a relationship where eventually you realize, wow, we've really changed over these years and now we actually don't want the same things, or we are not the right fit. It's the same thing with friendships. It's just part of growing and evolving as a human being. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. And I hear people a lot that sort of, they have this, they feel like they must maintain this friendship because of how long the friendship has been around for. And I do think that there needs to be some loyalty there where you are there for them as a friend if they need you. But it doesn't mean that you necessarily have to continue to spend all your time with them, you know, because things change and people change, and that's okay. So that's the awareness too, is just sort of being aware of like, how are these people making me feel? And are they giving me energy? And I like, that single change will change your life. It changed my life. That's the biggest thing that has changed my life. If I would not have made the conscious decision to surround myself with people that inspired me when I was, you know, whatever I was, 20 years old, I wouldn't be here. Like, I just wouldn't. And so it's really powerful. You're the sum of the people you surround yourself with. And you want people that are rooting for you. You want people that believe in you. Because you're not going to believe in yourself a lot of the time. So you need to be around people that are like, no, you can do this. And also want you to succeed and celebrate you when you do succeed versus feeling jealous or feeling like this is something that is making them feel uncomfortable, because truly deep down, they actually want to do the thing that they want to do. So they, by seeing you succeed, it actually makes them feel, it's a little bit of a pain point.
So you were able to take a situation of the one person in your phone book that inspired you and you were able to call them. How were you not, see, what I've heard someone describe recently is like, they didn't feel like they had friends. They reached out to one person and then they were too into that person's life. They were needy because they needed the friend. They needed the person who inspired them. So how do you not have neediness in that interaction when you're in actual state of lack?
Right. Well, that is a good question. And the answer, which is not, it's not necessarily easy to do, but it's doing the self work, right? Like it's doing the work so that you feel like you are evolving outside of what, you know, getting that from someone else. But it's also doing the work so you feel that you love yourself enough that you you don't need anybody, you know? So I think that part of my journey has been understanding, one, that I need to be hyper aware of the energy I get from other people because that fuels me left or right. But not confusing that with the validation of other people. So not confusing that with the praise or with the what other people think about me, because that also can move me left or right. But that's different. And this sort of, you know, getting to the place where you feel like you are so good with yourself. You know, I'll say self-love because that's what it is, but it may come across as a little bit woo-woo, but really that's exactly what this is having enough self-love that you don't need that validation. You also don't need anyone else, right? And so like for me, for example, when I was in a long relationship and I got out of the relationship and I was like, you know, okay, who am I going to meet? You know, what's this next person going to be and how am I going to do it? And what's that going to look like? And
it's yourself.
Exactly. At the end of the day, it wasn't until the point that I got to, which was, I don't need anybody. I am good. I can see this whole life that's incredible on my own. And I'm actually excited about that. And if someone comes along, that's a bonus. But I don't want anyone. I don't need anyone. I feel so good with where I am right now on my own that if I didn't meet someone for the rest of my life, I would be cool. In fact, more than cool, I can see this brilliant existence. And as soon as I got to that place, I met my partner. And she was at the same place where she was doing, and that took self-work. You know, so to answer your question, it was making a conscious decision to really start to focus inward and do things that were really helped me understand who I was, right? So, and if this whole journey is about understanding, if the journey is to be true to yourself, well, first you have to understand who you are. And that means investing in the personal work. And that's different for everyone, right? A lot of times it's therapy. You know, you can't go wrong with therapy. And then there's these myriad of different things that you can do. The things that have moved the needle for me, one has been therapy and also kind of like switching therapists. You know, like I feel like I get to a point with a therapist where we've kind of plateaued.
It's the mirror. You've seen the mirror exactly. For that person enough times where you need to look at a different mirror.
Exactly. And just like any relationship, like I said, with friends, with partner, like, you know, it's kind of evolved to the point where I then talk with friends and someone eventually, you know, a couple of people suggest they've been talking with this person. I'm like, oh, let's try talking with this person. And I'll maybe go back to my other therapist that I have been speaking to for years, but now I have this kind of Rolodex.
He's in an open relationship with his therapist.
Exactly. Rolodex of therapists where it's sort of like at different points, I go to this person and talk to a support network. So I start to learn more about myself. Now, again, this is a privileged place to be able to talk with therapists. A lot of people don't have the opportunity to talk with therapists. You could also talk with someone that you know loves you, that you know cares about you, as you start to go through these challenging times or you're looking for self-growth. But there are also more accessible forms of therapy, you know, like digital talk therapy. There's different programs. But therapy has been something that has been one of the biggest. I also want to mention, it's hard to find a good therapist.
How do you find a good one?
You just have to know that it's going to take a bit of time. You have to know that this is like dating, where if you finding someone that you like at a party. If you walk into a cocktail party, what's the chances that the first person you run into, you're going to vibe with? They're very good at what they do, right? And you like them. And that's kind of what you need with therapists, is you need them to be very skilled. You also need there to be this kind of like chemistry, and that you respect and like the person. So you kind of like talking with them, because you need to, at some level, enjoy, even though it's difficult, what you're doing, versus just really like thinking like, shit, I got to go into therapy right now. It's like a huge chore. Like at some point it's got to be like a little bit of, you get something out of it. You're excited to kind of dive in, even though it might be hard. So that, I think, knowing that it takes time to find the right therapist is important, so that you don't just like reach out and then talk with a therapist and be like, oh, this is like awful. Therapy is not for me. It's like, well, maybe that therapist is not for you. So that's been big, is the therapist, and over the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years. But I also did a program called Hoffman Process, which was unbelievable. I would say, if you can't do anything, just go to Hoffman. Hoffman is like a 1 week personal development, just deep dive. And it's just a very special experience, where you can only do it once. It's a nonprofit. It's been around for 50 years. And they really incorporate different elements of therapy into this. They've been sort of tweaking this process for 50 plus years. And it just, I guarantee you'll come out of that with a deeper understanding of who you are and your authentic self. So that's something that I did, and, you know, different types of meditation. And, you know, my next thing is probably Joe Dispenza, but like, just there's so many different things you can do, but you really need to just do the work and commit to it. And then once you do that, you continue to understand who you are there, and then you can start to live from that place. And so, you know, long-winded way of it answering your question is like, if you don't want to rely on that person, you know, ultimately you can't rely on anybody. So you want to notice when you're around these people that make you feel more like yourself and make you feel more alive, so that you can consciously be with more of those people and spend more time with them. But you're not relying on them for your inspiration. And so this comes to, okay, if it's not people, then it's doing things that inspire you, make you feel more alive. And so then you come back to, well, that is what your bucket list is. Your bucket list is just a list of all the things that might make you feel more alive, might give you energy, might make you feel more like yourself. And then what you're doing is you're starting to go and you're just collecting data, and you're trying a thing. And if it energizes you, then you do more of it. If it doesn't, you take it off. But this is like your testing ground to figure out, what are these things that make you feel more like yourself? And sometimes you don't know. Sometimes you think, I want to write a book. And you start to write a book and you're like, this is fucking awful. Like, I do not want to do this. Great. You tried it. Now you don't have to lay on your deathbed and be like, I wish I wrote a book. Next, you know? And the bucket list journal is meant to get you thinking about these things and these areas of your life that you might not think about. And so you're sort of collecting data, but the important thing is that it's not about the accomplishments. It's about doing. It's the act of doing that it's important, because that's how you collect that data to understand what makes you feel more true to yourself. And so as you start to do more and more of these things, and you have more people that make you feel true to yourself, you have more things that you do that make you feel more authentically alive. And you then start to become that person that is more true to yourself. And you're doing more personal work so that you understand, oh, this is my roadblock. This is my blind spot. This is my pattern that I've been doing since I was a young kid, based on my parents, the way they raised me, or this and that when I was younger. And in those developmental years, you are going to, without a doubt, create these patterns of behavior. And these patterns of behavior are going to start to fire so quickly that you don't even know that this is something that you're doing, because it's so, the neural pathway is so ingrained that it just, it's not a decision, it's subconscious. And so you start to, when you do that more personal, you start to realize, oh shit, I always thought this is the way I was. I always thought I just didn't like this, or I was like this. And it's like, no, that's, I can change that pattern. I can create a new pathway by doing this. And then you start to realize that you, you're really in control of every moment. And I mean, the big idea is how you feel, although that's quite tough, but like that's the goal, is to be, in the present moment so much that you have this space so that you actually, you're always in control of how you feel, versus being at the effect of how, of external things that are making you feel a certain way. Because the truth is, you sort of create your own reality, and you're not at the effect of other things that are happening. So those, in short, would be the three things, right? Surrounding yourself with people that inspire you, doing things, and then doing that personal work so you start to understand what it is that makes that who you are, so that you can live true to that.
Okay, so on the personal work, mm-hmm. side of things with the Hoffman process. What is this? I've heard so much about it. And for someone who was trying to do it, what should they be thinking about before they go into it?
So Hoffman was started by a guy named Bob Hoffman, as I said, about 50 plus years ago. And he realized, he was a therapist. I'm not sure if he was a psychiatrist or not, but it doesn't really matter. And he started to realize that there was this gap in human development. As kids, what we need as babies is 24-hour love. But unfortunately, that's impossible, because at some point our parents have to go to work, or, you know, our parents have to tell us we can't do something. And we take that as, because we can't, as young kids, conceptualize that something would be this person that gives us life and gives us food, there could be anything wrong with them, right? We internalize it. We say, well, there must be something wrong with me. Therefore, I'm not lovable, or I'm not enough, or insert any type of negative self-talk. And we start to believe that, because we have to do that to survive. And so in the beginning, it's this essential survival kind of pattern of behavior, but it continues to run throughout our entire life, and that really holds us back. So what he realizes is that there's this sort of cycle of transformation that you can do, where one, you have to become aware of these patterns because they're running in the background. Two, like, and by the way, whether you have the best parents or you had awful parents, you're still going to have these patterns. So the awareness, so you sort of first become aware of these patterns, then you do this really interesting thing where you do self-expression, where you get the energy of this behavior out of your body. So it's this cathartic physical expression.
What is that? What does that
so
mean?
So it's sort of, you know, without going into it too much, because I think part of it is that you don't want to know everything, but you're physically getting this energy out of your body, right? So where that might be like voice, yelling, or physical. So you're getting it out. And then the next step is self-love and forgiveness. You forgive your parents, you forgive yourself, And then this is the really interesting part. You create these new ways of being where they do this really incredible visualization and these different sessions of world-class visualization where you start to create these new ways of being through the visualizations. So I told you that, you know, these patterns of behavior, they're literally physically ingrained in your neural pathways to the point where it's like, if you think about, if there's a grass field and you're driving a truck, eventually you're going to create a little road in the grass where there's going to be two tire marks all the way through. And that's the easiest, that's a path of least resistance. That's the way you're going to go. And the first time that you drive off that road, it's bumpy. You don't know where you're going and you have to create your own new road and it's fucking hard. Second time, still hard, but you see the tire track so you can follow it. And so that's what you do with your brain where you start to create these new ways of being in your head because your brain doesn't know the difference between a real experience and an imagined experience. So when you imagine this new way of being, when you then in the real world come up to this fork in the road where you have an option, your brain's like, oh wait, we've done this other thing before. Let's do that. And then you drive the road on the track that has not been driven and you start to create this. And that's how you change your behavior. So it's this cycle of transformation, which is really interesting. And really, but the other piece of Hoffman is what they're bringing you back to is your authentic self. And so this was cool because I go into Hoffman and I'm already on this journey of figuring out the importance and understanding who I am. And this came out of this long relationship that I was in. It was in a 7-year relationship. And I realized that it just wasn't right.
What? Oh, okay. Well, I got to stop you there. How did you realize that? Like,
well, one was this deep feeling, this gut of like, I'm just not feeling fully expressed in this relationship. Like when I'm with her or I'm out with her and friends, I don't feel like it's like there's a ceiling or I'm not that full expression of myself. And when I'm with other people sometimes, like other friends, it unlocks this full expression. And I was kind of like, well, I guess maybe this is just what happens, you know, in relationships. I guess this is eventually you sort of maybe just kind of, maybe this is growing up, right? Like this is sort of compromising. I don't know. I was justifying it. Because it's hard to leave a relationship when it's good, but it's, you feel like there might be something more. And that was the position I was in. And so it just took a lot of work, talking with therapists, figuring out what I wanted, talking with her. And I got to the point where I realized, I don't think this is the right partnership for us. And I left and it was really hard. And it wasn't until, you know, maybe 6 months later that she realized and we both fully understood, wow, thank God we did this. And we both started to feel more like ourselves. And immediately I felt like that, where I remembered how I used to live. And I, as I said, remember this, when you live true to yourself, life starts to happen for you. All these things started to come into place that I've been working on for so long, from just like big business things to little things during the day, serendipitous things. And I remembered how life could be magical when you trust that inner voice. And so that was this feeling that I was feeling. So I was like, okay, I am never not being true to myself. This is the rule. Like I have to. This is so fucking important. And so a year after that experience, I go to Hoffman and the day one, they're talking about effectively, this is all about being your authentic self. I'm like, no way. This is great. And then I started to realize this is what I speak about. Because I sort of peeled back the onion and, you know, I talk about this bucket list journey and I talk about how to achieve goals. And I started learning about the regrets that people had at the end of their life and that the number one regret 76% of people had was not living for them. They lived for other people. I was like, Jesus Christ, what a terrible way to die. You're on your deathbed. You lived your whole life and you realize too late that you fucked up. And there's nothing you can do. And I thought, this is a huge problem. This is a huge problem. Why is this happening? I started to learn, you know, there's three reasons that are the biggest barriers that ultimately people subconsciously don't see that leads them to this end result. So I'm going through all this stuff and I'm like, wow, actually, this is really what I'm talking about, is not dying, regretting, not living for you. This is about reverse engineering your life so that you don't have that regret, because I can't imagine dying with that feeling. And so I thought, okay, my job is to wake people up and try and get as many people as I can into that minority of the 24% that live their life. And when they get to the end of their life, they're like, all right, at least I gave it a shot. You know, at least I live for me. And I think most people, you know, you end that way and you live longer, because I see people that live that way and they're more vibrant, they're more alive. And I could see people after my keynotes come up and be like, before they even said anything, I knew what they were going to say. And that's like, this is how I live my life. I say, yep, I know. I can see it on your face.
You could see it in someone's eyes.
Yeah.
Like almost immediately.
Immediately. I was like, you look like you're 30 years old and you're probably 50. And I can feel it with your energy. And before I even heard what they said, I was like, yep, you're going to tell me this is how I live my life. So I was sort of starting to understand all this as I went into Hoffman. And then that really cemented this truth, because that's really, you know, this, the power of living your, they call it your spiritual self, which is your authentic self, and starting to listen to your spiritual self and get into a conversation or a dialogue with all parts of your being, your spiritual self, your emotional self, your physical self, and your intellect, which is your brain and your, and so you, another piece of the Hoffman process is really starting to listen to all parts of those so that you can hear what your body's telling you. You can hear, usually we're run by our intellect and that's it. And that gets you, that's a problem. That can get you into trouble because you're not listening to your body. You're not listening to your emotional self, which are the feelings that you're having. But most importantly, you're not listening to your spiritual self, which is your true guide, which is putting you on that path of your highest purpose. And that's when you unlock your greatest impact. And so with Hoffman, you start to listen to each part of your being, but then you get them to start to communicate together so that your spiritual self becomes the leader. And that is what I've realized I'm also trying to do with my own life is, and what I'm speaking about is, oh yeah, it's like if you can lead with that, and you can call it your spiritual self, you can call it your authentic self, you can call it your true self, you can call it whatever. But really, it's that, it's you know, and a lot of times it's just that thing that we want to do that we've convinced ourselves we either aren't able to do it, we don't deserve it, we don't have time, we don't have the ability, it's not for us, it's selfish. And that's what I hope people write on their list and start to prove to themselves that all those are stories and that they can do it. And all they need to do is just start taking action, enroll the people around them to keep them accountable and to move through the fear of what other people think or the fear of failure.
What do you think are the most, so the fear of what other people think often is related to holding the insecurities and believing that those insecurities are going to be judged when often they're not. But I think it's confronting and accepting the insecurities and being willing to talk about them. What were the insecurities for you? And what are the insecurities for you that hold you back from being your truest version?
I'm not very good at being vulnerable.
You're being vulnerable right now, yeah, by saying
good,
that.
I'm good in some ways. I was not good at being vulnerable about my mental health struggles, and now I'm very excited to talk about it because it's something that I've realized is a gift. It's a tool that I can use to help other people. And by talking about it more, it's lost its power over me. So I know this intellectually that, you know, these things that we feel are so,
we have such shame around.
Yeah. The more that we talk about them, the less shame we have. But, I do still struggle with being, open and vulnerable about just the day-to-day struggles that I have. And, namely on social media. And I don't say that because like, I think that you should be necessarily vulnerable on social media or expose what's going on. But the way that I believe that I will be able to be on social media in the long term is the only way I'm going to do that is by being myself. And I haven't quite got there. Like I'm getting better, but I really want to get to the point where I can just be who I am, not care about any of the reaction, and just be the person that I am with other people at all times. And I'm not quite there yet. So I am not vulnerable as vulnerable as I think that I should be.
What's the number one reaction that gets under your skin?
I think that I don't like if people don't like me at all. Like in this case, it dates back to when I went through my first time of struggle and my first depression. It was like, I was so wrapped up with other people and what they thought. And so if I know that someone has an issue with something that I do, then I have a hard time. If I say something that I feel like ostracizes someone or rubs someone the wrong way, or they misinterpret what I say, I have an issue. And the problem with that is that you can't please everyone. You can't not rub someone the wrong way. It's inevitable. So just accepting that, like trying to sit in my truth of being like, I just believe in this. And it doesn't matter what other people think because I know in my heart that this is a truth. And putting that out there, that's really, really helped. And not worrying about how many people like it or not, and not worrying if people think it's wrong or think that they don't agree with it. It's just like, look, it's like knowing that it's impossible to please everyone is the first step, I think. And then continually coming back to that, like, oh, this is my truth and that's it.
That's beautiful. When going back to the Hoffman process, what was the biggest difference between who you were on day one versus who you were when you came out of it?
I had a much deeper connection to nature and realizing that, you know, this that for me to come back to my spiritual self or my true self, one way I can do that is to go in nature. I had a realization that presence is self-love. So anything I can do to bring myself into the present moment is self-love. And it doesn't just need to be meditation or yoga or the traditional kind of forms of presence, but you know, being with someone in a conversation, eating my food and tasting it, breathing, noticing my breath, doing things that I feel I am in present moment. Like I love playing tennis. So just like sports or other creative pursuits, but just really starting to understand how unpresent I was.
Really?
Yeah.
Where did that show up the most?
I just trying to achieve, right? Always thinking about the next thing. I did not stop. I still don't really stop. So
yeah. I was going to say, how is that still in your life?
Yeah. I mean, it's better, but it's still something that I really need to work on and try to. It's like, being okay with not doing something. In fact, being more than okay, like seeing that as a success.
Yes.
Redefining what my definition of success is. Is it scaling and growing and doing more and making more money and all this stuff? Or is it sleeping through the night, waking up energized, excited to do the things that I want to do, making sure I have time to do these things that I love with people that I love, and not getting caught up with this sort of subconscious definition of what success is, which is more. And so I really kind of connected more to the present moment and had this realization that that's anything that was bringing me back to that moment was self-love and just this deep-rooted belief in the truth of the importance of being your authentic self, right? That really cemented the stuff that I was starting to come to. But after Hoffman, I was like, oh, okay, can't fuck with this. Like, this is this is the truth. So I became a better speaker because I was so, I just believed this concept, this idea, this truth so much that it emanated out of me in a different way. And I became a better speaker because I wasn't doing a talk track. I was just channeling this truth. And that's why I love speaking, because you can really just like, you can see people change real time. Yeah. And this is cool because we get to put something out that hopefully will change people. But, you know, if you can watch someone transform and then talk with them afterwards, that is just a very powerful experience. So I love speaking, and it's just, it's also fun because it's like improv and comedy and storytelling and theater. And, you know, I look at my keynote like a play. It's just, it's a piece of art that I'm, you know, bringing people along this journey to hopefully transform them in the end. A lot of times they don't even know what's happening, right? Because they sort of see this, who they think is a kid, right? Up on stage. And I'm speaking to companies and executives and board members, and, you know, they're in Kansas or they're in New York or they're in Orlando. It's all over. So they really don't really understand what I'm going to be talking about, because a lot of times it's conferences where they sort of have to be there, right? And they're like, okay, opening keynote, closing keynote, they're there. And they think it's about a bucket list, when in reality, it's about so much more. And so to see this shift is really funny. It's really fun to experience that. And so I became a much better speaker because, one, I was more present on stage. So that just hits different when I, you know, when I see people speak, on some level, I know whether they mean the words they're saying.
Yes.
And I know whether they're telling a story they told a million times. And like, I've told some of those stories a million times, but each time I tell it, like, it feels like I'm telling it for the first time because I'm tapping back into that truth. So it's just, I became a much better speaker. It just cemented some of this self-work stuff that I'd been doing as well. So it's a great process, dude. It's like, you should do it.
I will.
Everyone should do it. I've sent a couple people and it's been really life-changing for them. It takes time to get in. What I would suggest is, because they're so booked out, you just put in your deposit. It's like $500. And you set a date of when you want to go, 6 or 8 months down the road. But you can always request different dates. You can request different weekends to get on a wait list. And usually, because it books so far out, when the time comes, a lot of people can't do it. So you can move in and do the date earlier or whenever you want. But it's in Northern California. It's on the East Coast in Connecticut. And then there's a couple around the world.
So cool. I mean, I'm definitely, the way you talk about it and the way you say it transformed your life, and I feel like it really did, makes me really excited to check it out.
Yeah.
How does the way that you speak and do speeches, what does that say about you specifically?
Well, I try to be a speaker that is the same on stage as off stage, because I don't resonate with speakers that are different on stage. So I try and be as authentic as I can. That's my speaking style. And I always try and make it better. I really look at it as an evolving piece of art where, you know, I'm trying different things. I'm tweaking my slides. I'm I'm noticing that, oh, if I pause here, I get a bigger laugh. Or if I try this message, say it this way, it seems to resonate more. Or if I, you know, maybe try this story. It's just this thing that I'm always tinkering with in the workshop. And as I learn more, I add more depth to it. And so I really try, and I think that you need to make people laugh every at least 5 minutes. So I also think that you need to be very open and vulnerable to connect with them. So you need to share things that you might not be comfortable sharing, because that's how you build trust with the audience. And the only way that they're going to be receptive to your takeaways is if they trust you. So you build trust by being open and vulnerable. You build trust by making them laugh. And you build trust by being authentic. So those are the three most important things that I try and do every time I speak. And then I'm trying to be present, and I'm trying to really like look at all the people in the audience and take in their presence when I'm doing this, so that I can like sort of be with them as I'm having the conversation. Because it's not a conversation, it's just me talking. So I need some way to kind of make it intimate. And that means like connecting with people just by looking at them, or by taking in their, their reaction. And a lot of times that's like through laughter and stuff, and building that type of rapport. But that's it. But it's always different. It's always different crowd. They're always different amount of time. Sometimes they're like 35 minutes, an hour. Sometimes you do a interaction. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes it's like focus on the mental health toolkit and more of those habits. Sometimes we'll do the bucket list journal, where we'll start to write our list and have people share their dreams, start to work together. So, I never get tired of it, because it's always something different. And I think that the speakers that I see that burn out, they're doing the same talk. And so you either continue to evolve your talk, or you continue to evolve so that you are a changed, you're a different person doing the talk every time. And that's what I mean by like, I'm channeling this sort of truth that I continue to believe in so much. And that's what makes it energizing for me.
Growth is the natural part of life. Mm-hmm. And it almost feels like we are put here to grow. What do you think, when you look at your own growth, is like, this thing or these things are the most responsible for my growth, of helping me break out of the patterns that I previously was in?
Relationships, it's seeing, I did Hoffman because about half of my friends did Hoffman, and they were like, I just knew, okay, I guess I have to do this at some point. I didn't even have a reason to do it, in the sense that I wasn't struggling with anything. I felt the best I'd ever felt. And I was like, I don't know if this is a good idea. Like, I'm feeling really good. Like, what? And, that was a great time to go into it. My partner now, she is the biggest reason for my growth, because of her commitment to personal growth and just the way we are together, and just this sort of shared commitment to be better for each other and build a relationship that is different. And so, for us, that what we just started to do was couples therapy, even though we don't really have a reason right now to do it. But we thought, if we will eventually, so why not get ahead of the game and start to work on some of these things that eventually will be an issue. I mean, you're going to have conflict in a relationship. So let's start to look at that stuff now. And so that has been a huge driver for me to be better, and also like think about this next stage of my life and really becoming a man. And what does that look like? Is that, starting a family and building a life with someone? What does that mean for me? Because it's something that I've never seriously thought about. You know, I knew at one point I thought, well, that's just what you do. You have a family and that's the path. And then after my last relationship, I realized, well, do I need to have a family? Like, is that something you do? Or is it, and I realized, oh, there's a whole other option. You can not have a family and you can have a great life. And so I was forced to look at in my last relationship, do I not want to be in this relationship because I'm afraid to have a family? Or is it that I don't think having a family with that partner is the right thing? So that's when I first started to look at, oh, no, I do want to have a family, I think. But then also there's this option where I don't. And so I got comfortable with both. And so now I'm at the point where I found someone that I know I want to be with for the long haul. And so it's that evolution of, you know, and so that partnership has forced me to evolve. But I also get that from friends. And so those, I think those relationships have been the driving force in my growth.
It's beautiful. I want to talk to you about your parents.
Yeah.
You said your parents never led or had a rich life, but they lived a very rich life. Mm-hmm. And you said six reasons for that I'd love to share. Mm-hmm. One is they never lost their inner child. Two, they found their passions. Three, they danced. Four, they traveled. Five, they had incredible friends or have incredible friends. And six is they play and share that all with the world. Mm-hmm. What a beautiful reflection on your part to a life well lived. Mm-hmm. If you never lose your inner child, find your passion, dance, travel, have incredible friends and play and share that. I mean, mm-hmm. what more? But the fact that you saw that as an example with your own parents was a beautiful thing. But then also you reflected that you thought your parents were weird. And now you think of them as great examples.
Yeah.
So take me through that journey of realizing and appreciating the people who raised you.
I think that it's a common experience that we have as we start to grow, where at some point, you know, we realize that our parents are not our parents, and that the dynamic has changed, and we're not looking for them to take care of us, and eventually we're going to have to take care of them. We start to look at them as sort of human beings. It's really easy to stay in that high school mentality of being annoyed by things they do and continue to be in that kind of that state where you may think things that they do, like they're not smart, or they just like you don't want to listen to them, and all of these things that we go through when we're in high school. But I've realized that like you actually have to consciously like change your perception of your parents, or else you'll just always stay in that high school mentality. And so this was actually, again, through Hoffman, because you really kind of see your parents in a new way. I started to look at them as friends, and I started to see these gifts that they have and appreciate them, mainly because I started to realize that that is the reason why I am who I am, because of the way that they are. So this process of understanding these qualities that I have, first and foremost, and appreciating them and having a level of, you know, sort of self-love, but then connecting that to their qualities and realize, oh yeah, well, I'm this way because they are that way, and acknowledging them for that, and actually telling them that and sharing that with them for the first time, and appreciating them for who they are and those qualities, and then starting to see them in a different way and realizing like, yeah, wow, these these things that really used to piss me off are actually like pretty amazing. And you know, when I was in high school, my parents were weird. They still are very weird, but it's in the best way. But back in high school, you know, people that stand out, you're self-conscious, right? So my parents, like, they didn't have regular jobs. You know, they, my mom was, she did a million different things. It's really like, she was kind of a woman's coach in business, and she did team building, and she did all these different things. She sold soya products, right? Like back in the 90s. My dad was a clown. He was like a theatrical clown. So he did like a one-man musical show for kids at festivals and in theaters and stuff. So, you know, for me, this was like, all my other friends' parents were like doctors, lawyers, and like, I was like, they're like, what did your dad do? I was like, well, he's a clown. It's like, it was embarrassing. And I felt this level of shame around it, because also my house, like, parents didn't make a lot of money. I never, you know, when you'd go home to friends after school and you'd all have snacks. Like my snacks, we didn't have snacks. We had like raisin and dry soya products. Like, it's like, that's basically, I had almonds and raisins as a snack when I would go to school. So I was just, and now I'm super grateful for that, because I didn't have Twinkies and Oreos, right? Like, I actually ate healthy food, and that's such a great thing. But back then I was like, fuck this. So now I realize I'm grateful for all of those qualities. And part of it was my ego and stepping up and just getting over it and just being like, telling them, moving through that, that vulnerability, that discomfort of telling them how much I appreciate them, and letting go of these things that bugged me and pissed me off, and realizing that they're just that way because of their parents, and that they're just doing the best they can, and they're not actually at fault. So fuck it, let it go, right? And appreciate the things that are great about them. And that's when I started to see these other gifts, right? And also realizing that, like, they're not gonna be around for that long, you know, in this whole scheme of things. And you're probably gonna regret holding these little grudges against them, being annoyed by them. And so that was the process. And once I started to realize that, it felt like it was important to share, and it really started to resonate with a lot of people. And my parents are hilarious. My dad accidentally did my chocolate mushrooms one afternoon, and it was the funniest thing that I've ever seen. And he thought he had food poisoning. And I was like, I realized that he did chocolate mushrooms. And he's like, oh, thank God. It's just psilocybin. He was an absolute, like, I posted a video of it. It's the funniest thing I've ever seen. It's definitely worth checking out on my Instagram. I put it up. It has like 15 million views now. My dad is now more popular than I will ever be. I will forever be known as, oh, your dad is chocolate mushroom dad. Like, that's basically, I should just stop and just give up doing what I'm doing and just be like, all right, dad, you lead the charge here. It's so funny. Yeah, he's a riot, man. Like, that's how I got my sense of play. I think the big thing is that last piece is like, play and share it with the world, which is that share it with the world is actually the key, because then you get to share that joy and you get to spread it to other people, and then it magnifies through other people. And that's the big thing that I've gotten into lately, is just that play and that joy, and really investing in that. So I started a men's group where we just have one night where it's all laughs. It's built for laughter. So we just like, we do improv, we make up songs, we do poetry, we freestyle, it's a safe space to just be as wacky as you can. And it's the most therapeutic, fun thing that I've done in a very long time. And it's just like, you know, you can dabble in little things, have some drinks or have a little mushrooms or whatever. And it's incredible. And realizing that, like, creating that space to just, again, this is like your true self, right? Creative expression, play is the essence of who you are. And we suppress that from when we're very young. We start to think, I can't be that silly person anymore. I'm an adult, right? And Gabor Mate talks about this, like that play in the developmental years, especially, is like so vital for your brain development, even more so than food, you know. And so it's like, as we grow, we tell ourselves that we can't be that person anymore. Got to be mature. And it's not true. Like, you have to be a weirdo. You have to play. You have to have fun. You have to do these things for your own well-being and to like unlock your potential. So that's been a huge thing that I think is overlooked, is giving people permission to just play and have fun. And you kind of need to schedule that. You kind of need to like say, okay, here's this time that we're going to do this with like friends that you vibe with or partner or whatever, or just by yourself creatively. What's that self-expression? So you get into that flow state.
When you think about play, how can you insert that into your day-to-day life if you don't schedule it?
I think it's just...
It's impossible. I can't do it.
Yeah, I think it's just not taking yourself so seriously. And really like knowing that... Like I always think if I get stressed out about something, I'm like, am I going to remember this in a couple months? Usually it's not. And so... yeah, like I just try and not take myself so seriously, and look for those opportunities, those little moments where you can just jump on that, because that's like that. That's all about. It's like having fun. That's it.
Well, one thing that you're doing that's pretty fun is going to space.
Yeah,
2025. Congrats on that.
We're not playing around there.
Dude. I mean, hopefully you can have some play there.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
This is the last one or one of the last ones on
the 100? It's number 100 on the list of the original list. And there's four left, but that's one of the ones that we'll do, or you know, I'll do. I'm not sure if any of the other guys are going to come, but I'm definitely going to do it. 2025, number 100, go to space. With a company called Worldview that takes it's pretty wild. So they use helium balloon technology versus rockets. So it's actually quite safe, you know, comparatively. It's because you do a slow, gradual ascent up to the edge of the stratosphere. And then you're up there for a couple hours and then you come back down. So it's this massive balloon. It's like two or three football fields in length. That's how big this balloon is. So you can't even really imagine. And... It's such a cool thing, because I remember writing this down in the summer of 2006, 17 years ago. And it was couldn't happen. You had to be an astronaut, right? Like, it was impossible. And now it's possible. And this happens all the time, where there's things that you think are impossible that they actually are not, because they eventually become possible. Everything that we can see right now in this room used to be impossible. Cameras, you know, electricity, internet. Cars driving by, like, used to not be possible. One day, boom, they're reality. That happens all the time, and faster and faster and faster. So it's proof that the impossible is possible. So it's just a great reminder that you can never dream too big, and that it's just the key is persistence. You know, when you talk about like, okay, what are the top three barriers? There's no deadlines for these goals. So that's why we push them. So you got to create accountability. You're usually waiting to feel inspired. So you have to create your own inspiration through action. And you're stopped by the fear. So you have to identify, is this a fear or is it a risk? Is it fear? Is it my ego that I'm worried about, or is it an actual risk to my well-being? And moving through that discomfort is actually growth, right? So that fear is actually not bad. That's positive. That's you growing. That's you evolving. But when you look at like that one waiting to feel inspired and about taking small steps of action, if you just continue to take small steps of action, you will eventually get there. It may take 17 years, but you will get there. And it's just, most people give up. But if you continue to move forward and you're a good person, you do what you say that you're going to do, and you do it tactfully. Like, you're not just knocking on the same door every day for 17 years. You try different approaches, right? You look for opportunities. You're creative with your approach. You have this sort of like this persistence that's grounded in this deep knowing that eventually you will get there. So you're not sort of erratically trying to make it happen. It's just like, all right, like I'm just going to have a deep understanding that eventually I will get there. That energy is important, because people that eventually you will need to help you, you know, they feel that and they respect it. And so it's just this, it's so funny. It just comes down to these simple things, right? It's playing the long game. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And that's okay, because if it's about the act of doing versus the accomplishment, like for me, like if I never got to space, it's okay, you know, because it, at least then this process, like, I mean, look, I was on a panel at South by Southwest talking about the democratization of space travel. I met all these incredible people that at the edge of the commercial space flight industry, you know, I got to all these incredible experiences by pursuing this goal. I met these incredible people. And so if I never did it, it's like just the act of doing it has been really rewarding. And so this kind of like persistence that isn't needy, right? And just deep belief in yourself, because that's the persistence. You're not persistently asking someone else to help you. You're persistently moving forward, knowing that if you continue to stay rooted in that and you're a good person and you're authentic and you're tactful, eventually the opportunity will arise. And that's when you know you can step through that door, because it's the right time and the right person will help you.
To quote you, once you commit to big goals and live with intention, life opens up with unending possibilities.
That's
a good quote. Who wrote that?
Yeah.
Who wrote that?
You should write that one down.
Ben, I'm really, really honored to spend some time with you here today. Like, I really felt your passion and your excitement about life. And, you know, when you sat down, we start like talking small talk, you know, you're very subdued. And like, then like I see how certain ideas make you come alive. And it was really cool to witness that. And so thank you for opening yourself up for everyone to hear and to see the truth of your excitement and energy and passion. Because when you're talking about things you care about, like, you're the best version of you.
Thank you. That means a lot. I appreciate that, man.
Yeah. So I like to end these podcasts by asking the guest a challenge. A challenge points to the place in your heart you believe someone should take this conversation and actually do something with it in their own life.
Mm-hmm.
Does a challenge come to mind?
Yeah. Take some time with a notebook or the bucket list journal and start to write your list. Imagine you have all the money in the world. Imagine you have the ability to do anything, and write your list from that space. Look at your list. Look at one thing. Choose one list item that calls to you that you realize or you know that you want to start to move towards. And then do two things. Call someone else and ask them to be your accountability buddy, or enroll them in this goal so that they can do it with you. And what that means is an accountability buddy is someone that you are going to send regular updates to, and or they are going to check in on you, okay? So you've written your list, you've chosen the thing that you want to do, you call your accountability buddy, you enroll them, and then you make a list of three things that you can do in the next 48 hours that will move you towards that goal, and you start there. Three of the easiest things. And once you do those three things, then you just look at what the next step is. But that's going to force you to stop and think about what's important to you. You're going to decide what that one thing that you want to move towards intentionally. You're going to build accountability by enrolling an accountability buddy. And you're going to create your own inspiration through action by choosing three things that you can do and commit to doing them in the next 48 hours.
It's a great, great challenge. Where should we send people to connect with you further?
Instagram is the best, at Ben Nempton. It's where I'm most active. But also all the channels is the same, at Ben Nempton. Yeah. And the Bucket List Journal is on Amazon.
Wherever you buy books. Thank you so much, Ben. Really appreciate you.
Thanks, brother.